You've seen very many movies the last couple years, but I'm going to be honest, I've been really disappointed in stories. I feel like every movie I go see, it's like Dora the Explorer. So we're starting here and we're going there. And a really good story, like some of the best stories, though, they have a plot twist. You know, they have a surprise ending. That's really the kind of stories emotionally that we love and we remember, where evil has justice and where good kind of wins out. There's a twist at the end. And the reason we love them is we love that feeling of having tension being resolved. Like, we don't like being mid-story. You know, that's one of the reasons why you guys watch a whole season on Netflix. You start one episode, you don't like being mid-story. You're like, next thing you know, you're like, I ate a whole cake, you know, and it's Thursday. You lost your job because you wanted to see the tension resolve. You know, like, we want to see the end of the story. We don't like walking out or trying to stop mid-story. Earlier this year, I went out with two of my good guy friends, Chris and Ian, and we'll go watch movies. They're good friends. They're horrible at picking movies. They always pick these violent movies. And I can handle a lot of things. I don't like violence. They picked this movie, and I was like, they said it's a true story. So I'm like, okay, so we go. And it's about this teenage kid. He gets kidnapped. All this bad stuff happens. He's trying to get away, and you bond with him. But like two-thirds of the way through this movie, he loses an ear slowly. And as soon as I see some blood, I'm like, I'm out. I'm on my phone. I'm like, no way. And my two, like, big, tough guy friends, Chris sitting next to me, he's peeking. You know, it's that bad. Like, he's kind of peeking. There's a lady behind us starts sneezing, you know, and then Ian's over here. He's snacking. He's eating popcorn. And so I'm, like, just trying. I'm like, this scene probably lasted for, like, 2 minutes. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get through it. I got peeky, sneezy, and snacky, you know, next to me. And then we hear my friend Ian. He goes, oh, no. And we look over, and he goes, y'all, I'm sitting in the splash zone. And that's when we realized this poor lady behind us was not sneezing. And I don't look that fast. I was gone, all right? Like, Chris said, I turned back around, and it was like the rapture. Like, I didn't even get my drink. I'm out of there, you know? Somebody gets sick, I'm out of there. And so, like, 2 minutes later, my friends, Chris and Ian come out. They're like, we tried to stay, but, man, we couldn't do it. You know, there's cleanup at Theater 10. And so now we're in the lobby and we're like, but we need to know what happens to this stupid kid. You know, like, I can't go home now. Like, I'm not going to go to sleep. So we literally end our night sitting on the curb Googling, you know, the rest of the story to figure it out. Because I'm like, I don't want to leave mid-story. I can't leave mid-story. I have to know something good came out of that whole story. Like, I can't end right now. That we need that kind of resolution. You know, where we at least long for that kind of resolution, especially when it has to do with suffering. We want to know, man, does pain, is there a point to this pain? And really, this is the reason why a lot of people in our world and a lot of your friends that don't believe in God, this is one of the reasons they don't want to believe in God, is most people in our world who don't believe, they look to the world and they say, man, there is no way that God could make a good ending out of all the evil, all the pain that's in this world. Does that make sense? I understand where that's coming from. They're looking and going, man, there's no way God could make a good ending out of all this. And so therefore, he either must not be good, or he must not be powerful, or he must not exist. That's what lost people, that's where they're at as they look at the story we're in. And if you're not careful, you'll be there too. Because things touch our life too. Evil touches our life. And unless you have a good biblical framework for God, his character, evil, suffering, there's going to be something that touches your life, and it's going to tempt you to walk out mid-story on your faith. And a lot of people have. As painful things come, if we're not equipped, then you will want to walk out on the story that God's writing. And I'm saying, don't walk out. Do you know the Bible is full of stories of people like you and me? And the Bible is full of hope in those stories. It's story after story of people whose lives look like they're spiraling out of control. They look like everything's going wrong, and then God flips the story for good at the end. And those stories are written for you and me so that we would have hope. Story after, this is why you need to read the Bible to see that over and over, God says, I can flip any story. And the story we're going to look at today is one of my favorite, and you maybe have heard it before. It's in the first book of the Bible. It's the story of Joseph. And God gives us this story as a picture. It's one of the longest stories in the whole Bible. It's like 13 chapters. But this story is a gift. It's for you and me to show us that, man, even when life looks like it's spiraling, even when life looks like everything's going wrong, God can flip any story for good. If you got your notes, I'm going to give you the really quick TiVo, like Cliff Notes version of this 13-chapter story. Some of this is in your notes, some of it's not. But the story of Joseph starts with him being favored by God and favored by his dad, which made his brothers absolutely jealous. When the brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the other brothers, they hated him. And Judah said to his brothers, well, what profit is it if we just kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him. It's even worse. Let's sell him to foreigners. They betray him for money, put him into the hands of foreigners. It's just like Jesus. Joseph is a picture of Jesus all the way through. He ends up in this man's home named Potiphar and eventually becomes the manager of his home. So things look bright for a little bit until Potiphar's wife, you know, starts to make some moves on Joseph. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Oh, poor Joseph, right? He's handsome in form and appearance, and after a time, the master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. That's ancient Hebrew for the first cougar, like, in history. This were us. So she pursues him. He flees. You know, he has integrity. He flees out of the situation, but she lies about it, accuses him. So Joseph's master takes him and now puts him into prison. You know, do you see his life? Betrayed and sold by his own family. Then now, you know, even though he's innocent, accused, put into prison where the king's prisoners were confined. There's two guys in there in prison with him, and they have dreams. Joseph is able to interpret dreams because he knows God. And he says, yeah, one of you, you're going to be restored to the king's side. The other, you're going to be executed. It's not good news. But to the guy who's going to be restored, he's like, listen, remember me. Like when you stand back before Pharaoh, remember me. Next verse. But the cupbearer did not remember Joseph. You're like, you got to be kidding me, right? You had one job. This is the first, you had one job, but forgot him. And now, I don't know if it's in your notes or not, but it says this, after 2 whole years. You know, I don't brush past sentences like that anymore. You with me? You may know where this story is going, but think about this for a minute. After 2 years, then Pharaoh has a dream. In Joseph's life, if you pause right here in this story, you would say, Joseph, your God isn't working. Like, whatever you're doing, it's not working. You know, you're doing all the whatever your God says to do. You're keeping all the rules, you know, and you need to curse God and die because it's not working. Your faith's not working. Like, whatever you're doing, this you need to get another religion. You get another God. It's easy to mock mid-story. You with me? It's easy to mock mid-story. But that's not all the story. I remember when I was young, my dad took me to my first movie premiere, and it was a movie called Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars. Anybody go see Empire Strikes Back, like when it first came out? You know, I was so excited, man. These are my heroes. I walk out of that movie like 2 hours later as a little kid. I was like, oh, my brain was hurting. I'm like, what just happened? You know, everything went wrong. I mean, Han Solo is frozen wall art. Boba Fett got away. Luke Skywalker lost a hand, kissed his sister, and found out his dad was the most evil person in the galaxy, right? That's like 4th of July at your house. Somebody lost a hand, kissed her sister, found out my dad was evil. And then it was like, see you in 3 years, buddy. You know, I mean, we didn't have Netflix. It was like, see you in 3 years. And I went, oh. But I knew there must be more story. Like, there must be more story ahead. Like, this can't be the end of the story. and it was awesome. There was hope. You know, your life is not a romantic comedy. Just not everything in life is resolved in 2 hours. Pharaoh sits here in prison, faithful. Then Pharaoh has a dream, and the cupbearer remembers, I know a guy who can interpret dreams. Pharaoh's dream was about 7 years where they would have plenty of food, and then 7 years that would follow, there would be no food. There'd be famine in all the land. They bring Joseph out of prison. Joseph not only interprets the dream, but starts to give him advice. He says, gather all the food these good years that are coming. Store grain under the authority of Pharaoh in the cities and let him keep it. And the food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are occur in the land of Egypt. This is wise. This is a wise plan. So the land may not perish through the famine. He not only saves Egypt, he ends up saving millions of people and all the nations around. Look, moreover, at the end of this chapter, it says, all the earth ends up coming to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was that severe in all the earth. His life saves the lives of millions of people. His brothers, eventually they have to come for food too. And he, like Gandalf, reveals who he really is. And they're surprised that he's not angry with them. Listen to the theology of what Joseph says in this moment. He says to them, God sent me. God was doing something bigger than we saw. God had a narrative that we didn't see. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on the earth and to keep you alive and many survivors so that it was not you who sent me here. But it was God. That's good theology. At the end of this story, when their father dies, the brothers worry again. Maybe Joseph will get revenge now. And when Joseph's brothers saw that their father is dead, they said, maybe that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to them. And he'd be right to do it. What they did was evil. But Joseph said to them, do not fear. Am I in the place of God? God's going to deal with this in the next chapter. But he said, as for you, you meant evil against me. Underline this sentence. This will get you through life. This is good theology. You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. You can't see where the story's going. I want you to write this down. This is the new answer that I'm starting to offer to people when they talk about pain and talk about suffering and evil in the world. I think there's a loving way to say this, that if evil appears pointless to me, that doesn't make it pointless. Just because evil seems like it's pointless to you doesn't mean that it's pointless. You just can't see the whole story. You're not big enough. You know, we're not big enough to see where the story's going. You've been surprised before. Right? Let's be honest. If Harry Potter surprised you, why don't you think God can't surprise you? You know, just because something appears pointless to you doesn't mean that it's going to be pointless at the end of the day. You're not big enough to make that judgment. Make a planet, okay? Just after you've made a planet, then maybe you can have an opinion. You know, just make one. Count some stars. Start with one galaxy, right? Like after you've done that, then maybe we can have an opinion about whether this story is going to be good or bad at the end. But you're not big enough right now. You don't see the whole story. Even in your life, you don't see where the story's going. You know, my wife taught me something recently. She said, Claude, if you see someone with a tattoo of a semicolon, you need to stop and ask them. You need to stop them and ask them the story. I didn't know this, but this is a common thing for someone who's had suicide touch their family or touch someone they loved, or maybe they've survived suicide, the semicolon has become a symbol to say, don't put a period on your story. In other words, God can change any story. Don't put a period on your story. Isn't that a beautiful, powerful way of reminding us, man, there's always more story to go. And you know, as Christians, we believe that not even death puts a period at the end of your soul. You with me? Not even death puts a period on who you are. There is another chapter coming, and it's a long one, and it's going to be a good one. But you can't see. You can't see where it's going. That's why a lot of times God calls Christians in this life to endure. Endure. You are mid-story. Your whole life might be mid-story. but we're called to endure. Isaiah 43 says this, when you pass, and I want you to notice this word, through the waters. Underline the word through. It'll be good for you. I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they won't overwhelm you, but you're going through them. And when you walk through the fire, you won't be burned. See, we want a life that has no fire. How many want a life that's no fire? Let's be honest, right? I would love a life with no fire, but God says, I'll get you through the fire. You're going to walk through it, but I'll get you through it. And you know, most people who've had difficult things in their life, if you ask them maybe years later, it might take some time, but you know, most people even in this life look back on some of the hardships they face and say, you know what? It brought about good though. You realize that? You realize there are many people in our world that look back on some of the most difficult things and even say, if I had to go back, I wouldn't change what happened. It saved my marriage. It saved my life. It brought about good. Isn't that strange? We can see that in other people. We don't believe it for ourselves, but we see it all around us that people say, man, some of the best lessons I learned in life didn't happen in times of ease. They happened in times of pain. And they prepared me for who I am today. Anybody remember that movie, Slumdog Millionaire? You remember that where everything worked? You know, we all want the millionaire ending, but we live in the slumdog part. We live in the middle where we don't see, man, where the author's going. But God's preparing you. C.S. Lewis used to say this, hardships prepare ordinary people for extraordinary futures. You might have fire in your life, but God is refining you. He's preparing you. He's doing something through it. Viktor Frankl, who is a Holocaust survivor, said this, suffering ceases to be suffering at the moment it finds meaning. You feel like Joseph found meaning by the end of his story? Can you tell that he found meaning from God? That my life had a purpose? You notice that's why he's not bitter? You notice that's why he's like, I don't need to get revenge. He's not even angry. He goes, no, there was meaning behind it. There was a point to my pain. And it saved the lives of millions. Am I in the place of God? He found meaning. And his suffering, all of a sudden, all his suffering really ceased to be suffering at all. We just can't see the end, but the author can. That's the good news, man. The author can see where the story's going. One of my favorite authors, it's kind of nerdy, but it's J.R. Tolkien. He wrote The Hobbit. He wrote Lord of the Rings. Master storyteller. And one of the things J.R. Tolkien said is we need to invent a word. You know, he said there is a word for a catastrophe. You know, a catastrophe is sudden turning from good to bad. You know, and in life, you're gonna face catastrophes in your life. But he said, we need a different word. We need a new word. He invented a word. How smart is that, right? He invented a word. He said, it's called a eucatastrophe. Because in life, there isn't just catastrophe turning from good to bad. Life also has eucatastrophes, a sudden turning from bad to good, where evil is resolved, where justice is served. He called it eucatastrophe. And Tolkien took this idea from his faith in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's where he pulled it from. He said the greatest eucatastrophe in history was that the cross could lead to the resurrection. But the problem is for us, there's a Saturday in between. And for the disciples, imagine being the disciples. They've walked with Jesus for years. This is their Messiah. This is the King. This is the guy who's going to change everything. And on Friday, he dies. You know, they don't see where the story's going. Imagine life on that Saturday. In the Philippines, they call it Black Saturday. It's this, we don't see where the story's going. Everything's lost. How could God possibly be in this? How could God use a cross in his plan? And life is like the Saturday. Our life here, it's like this Saturday. We don't see how God might use even tough things that come into our life. You know, there's a family in our church several years ago, they started a business and they decided on the front end, man, we want to be generous. We want to give. We're gonna give to the church. We're going to give to missionaries. We're going to give sacrificially. We're going to give, you know, radically, like recklessly we want to give. We feel like God has called us to give by faith beyond what we can see. They gave so much one year, though, the IRS started to notice. And the IRS said, this looks shady. And they audited this family. They audited their business. And this, I mean, if you're a small business owner, you don't want to be on the radar of the IRS, right? Like, and so now all of a sudden they got this little guy going through every receipt, all their details, all their stuff. They're like, God, what are you doing? Like, this is horrible. You know, this is the kind of thing that could crush a small business. And you're looking around, you know, money is the most tempting thing to be dishonest about because everybody else is cutting corners and making it. Here we are, God, being faithful. Can you imagine? Here we are being faithful to give, giving sacrificially, and we get audited. You're like, God, where are you in this? He gets to the end of his like little, you know, calculator after like a month of auditing them, going through every receipt, every detail, sits him down. He's like, well, I found one mistake. It's a big one. He's like, we found a mistake. And their hearts just sank. And he sits down. He goes, it's a miscalculation, but it's not with you. He's like, we miscalculated. And he said, actually, the IRS now owes you more money back on your refund. Isn't that hilarious? I can't make stuff up like that. That's like Robin Hood, you know? Woo! Oprah, plot twist. And they, I mean, like, who saw that, right? Like, if you can't see that coming, what makes you think you can see what God is doing? You know, the perspective of a 100-year life cannot see the purpose in an eternal story. You're just not big enough. God's doing something, but your tax refund may not be in this life. It might be in the next one, but it's coming. Romans 8 says this, we know that for those who love God, I want you to underline these two words, all things work together. All things. All things? You know, I always read that and I go, all things? I look this phrase up. In the Greek, if you translate all things, you know what it means? It means all things. That's why they put it there. It's crazy. All things? Our pastor, Matt Brown, he says something all the time. It makes me so uncomfortable because it's so true. You need to write it down. God will risk my life to save my soul. That's scary, but he's right. All things in your life. God says, all things are on the table. I'll risk all things in your life but to save your soul. Sickness. You know, when I read through the Bible, one of the things that I started doing several years ago is I just read from Genesis to Revelation. Sometimes it takes me 2 or 3 years, but I just look for one thing. One is just all God's heart for the world. One is all the promises and commands of the Bible. And then I just retire that Bible. But in one Bible, I went back and looked for it. I noted every time God used sickness and disease to get people's attention and draw them back to himself. Do you know 36 times in the Bible, it says God allowed them to get a disease. God sent this into their life because he loved them. To get them to repent. Sickness? Psalms 119 says this. Yeah, you're not gonna sell that book at Lifeway. You know, the 36 diseases of the Bible. I'm gonna give that to my friends for Christmas. Psalms 119 says this. It was good for me that I was afflicted. That's a strange thing to hear. But I feel like that's what Joseph said. Do you see Joseph looking back and going, it was good. God, you're right. I didn't see it at the time, but it was good. Can you imagine? Like, can you imagine a time in your life that you look back on what you're facing and you say, God, it was good. It was good for me. What about death? There are some people that will say, Claude, we just need to go back to the Garden of Eden. We just need to get back to the garden. You know, if Adam had never sinned, everything would be great. We'd have this relationship with God. You know, we just need to put it all back in the box. If he'd have never done, as if, you know, we need to go backwards to the Garden of Eden, that would be a good thing. And I don't agree with that. There's a guy named Jonathan Edwards, much smarter than me. He wrote a sermon called East of Eden, changed my view on this. And here's what he said. And I want you to hold on to your brain for a minute, all right? But you're smart people. If Adam had never sinned, he'd have a relationship with God, but it would be based on his obedience day to day. It would be conditional based on him not sinning. You know, and even if there are 1,000 generations after Adam who still somehow had not sinned, the relationship with God would be based on them. And it would be, there'd be the potential for it to be lost at any moment, any day. But do you realize that even though Adam brought sin into the world and death, Jesus died and paid for all sin, your sin, past, present, future. That means your relationship now with God through Jesus is not based on you, it's based on him. It's not based on your obedience, it's based on his. It's not conditional, it's unconditional by grace. And listen to me, it cannot be lost forever. And Edwards said, what you have gained through Jesus is more than you lost through Adam. It's better. God is using all things for good. And when your friends say, God cannot be good in this, or he cannot be powerful, Jesus is the answer to both those things. Jesus is the answer to both. Here's why. God looked at this world and he did not stay aloof from the evil. He did not stay distant from the pain. He sent his son into this evil world because he's good. You with me? He's so good, he put himself on the hook for evil because he's good. And he raised Jesus from the dead because he's powerful enough to write another chapter in the story. Write this down. I have good reason to hope. Don't walk out on God mid-story. You have good reason to hope because this God loved you enough to enter into evil for your good. If evil touches your life, it's not because God doesn't love you. He entered into evil for you. John 3 says this, God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. You with me? He suffered for you. He hurt. He knows pain. He experienced pain for you. One of my good friends, his name's Matthias. He's from Paris. They're celebrating today. And he's a BMX champion, world champion. He's also like a movie star in France. He's a rock star. He's got tattoos all over his body. He travels the world. He's in GQ France last year. He started in a movie the year before that. He traveled last year 300 days of the year. And so I'll see him in 2 weeks in Huntington Beach. I follow him on social media. My kids love him. Like every time I travel, they're like, are you going to see Matthias? You know, he's just fun to follow on social media. He went to Japan about a month ago and he gets bored. You know, so when he landed, he was there in Japan for a week. He bought a goldfish. He thought this will be fun. Like, so he bought this goldfish, like his traveling companion for the week, named the goldfish Michelle. And so for the next week, all his social media is like, Michelle is about to have the best week of his life. And so he goes on a photo shoot and like he's doing a trick and Michelle rolls by on a skateboard, you know, or he's going up an escalator. There's Michelle. They go to a sushi restaurant. He's like, Michelle faces his worst fears. Michelle's in a bathtub. He's like, Michelle living the high life. He's going to like black tie events and everybody else is checking in their coat. He comes to check out. He's like, can I have my goldfish back, please? You know, it's hilarious. Michelle everywhere. And so at the end of this week, number one rule is never bond with a goldfish, right, kids? That plot twist is not going to end up good. So he bonds with this fish. And so he tweets at Air France. He's like, is it possible to bring a small goldfish back to Paris with me? It's very important. And Air France says, no, man, like, no. And so all of a sudden, his internet feed, it just blows up with plans to save Michelle. Everybody's like comment. It's like, you get a Ziploc bag, man, 8-ounce bottle, put him in your mouth. You know, it's like hashtag save Michelle. And like all these people are thinking of all these plans. It's hilarious. But at the end of the week, it's going to kill the fish, right? Like any of the TSA, any of the flight, to bring the fish home would have killed the fish. So he finally says, Michelle, I'm leaving Michelle behind with the family here, but ... Michelle will be with me for the rest of my days. And the next picture is a picture of his hand. And he got a big tattoo, last day in Japan. Big Japanese goldfish. And man, I got chills. I messaged him right away. I said, Matthias, He doesn't know the love of God. I said, you know, that's how God feels about you. You know what Isaiah 49 says? I will not forget you. I have engraved you on the palm of my hands. Now listen to me. That's comforting. God's not going to forget you. He engraves you on his hand. But God did something better for you. God found a way to bring you home. God found a way to pass through death and rise again on the other side so that he might bring you home with him. Jesus found a way. And listen, a million human minds would never come up with a plot twist like that. Don't walk out on your faith mid-story. God has plot twist up his sleeve. He's going to have the last plot twist in this story. I want you to write this down. You need to hold fast to God. Hold fast to God. The story's not over. John 16 says this, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome. I've found a way. I've overcome the world. And Jesus has went now to prepare a place for you, prepare a table for you in heaven. And Revelation 21 says this about that place. There's a new heaven and new earth where God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things have passed away. Listen, evil is going to be written out of this story forever. And you need to say, man, I'm staying for the end. God, I don't know where this story's going, but I'm staying for the end. I'm staying with you. One of my good friends, Ian, Splash Zone, Ian, who happens to also be campus pastor for our new campus in Lake Arrowhead. Ian got married this weekend, and I'm so excited about it, man. I remember when I first met him, he looks either dangerous or Amish, like this big dude with a beard. I didn't know if he's going to kill me or build me a gazebo, you know? And finally, man, he met this awesome girl, Melissa, and he's dating her for a while, and all of our friends were like, man, you know, Pastor Matt was like, if you mess this up, I'm going to punch you in the face. That's how we all felt. And so he's dating her, and he starts to tell me, this is how I'm going to propose. Telling me his engagement idea. You know, most guys go to like the beach or the cliffs or the sunset. He goes, I'm going to pick her up in my car and we're going to take off. And one of my officer friends is going to pull us over and I'm going to get arrested. This is how it started. And I didn't even listen to the rest of it. I was like, this is a horrible idea. You know, I went home and my wife, she's like, did you tell him not to do that? I was like, I don't know. I didn't even listen to the rest of it. And so he goes off and does this. And I'm like, man, girls cry. Like when girls pull over, you know, they get pulled over, they just cry. It's science. They just start crying. Like, it's horrible. So he has an engagement party. I was like, should we even go? I was like, so we'll go and just console Ian after this horrible, you know, plan. So we go late. They're late. I'm like, they're not showing up. They finally show up. I'm like, well, okay, that's a good sign. She's here. I look at her mascara. She's still got her mascara on. I was like, that's okay. That's a good sign. And I couldn't wait to ask her. I'm like, what did you do? Like, this is like an episode of Punked. You know, what did you do when he got pulled over? She's like, yeah, we took off and this officer pulled us over. They said, we have a warrant. You know, they came back to the car. We have a warrant for Ian's arrest. We're going to have to take him and arrest him. And I was like, what did you do? And she said, I said, I'm going to stay with him. Wherever he's going, I'm going. Like, I feel safer with him. I'm staying with him. And she had no idea, right, that around the corner is a table set for her and a proposal set for her where he'd ask her to stay with him the rest of their life. You know, you need to stay with God. Don't walk out mid-story on your faith in God. Because when God flips the story, it splits history into before and after. Like when God flips the story, there's an empty tomb at the end of it. When God flips the story, then they make an altar out of the ashes of our lives. When God flips the story, every knee is going to bow and every tongue is going to say, it was good. Great are you, Lord. Because the cross didn't triumph over Jesus, and evil is not going to triumph over your story. Because evil doesn't get to write the last sentence. God does. And it's going to be good. Let's pray. God, we need your help. We need faith to trust you in the middle of the story. And I know there's many here today that are hurting, that feel stuck, and are asking that question. God, where are you? And how could you possibly write a good ending? And we feel the darkness of living in that Saturday in between. But God, we know that you flip stories. You flip lives for good. You entered evil for us, and you raise people to life. You have a chapter waiting for us that's going to undo any evil. And we need that hope for ourselves, but we also need it for the world. We need it for others around us. Our world is in despair right now for hope. I pray that you'd make us a church that's a fountain, springs of hope in this world, that God, you're good. And that evil is not going to have the last word in this story. So God, we pray these things in the hope of the resurrection and the belief that you will make this story good for all who love you. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.